In the darkness before dawn, they loaded the water skins and the saddlebags onto the horses, then swung up bareback behind them. Taita led the way, skirting the cliff face and taking the easy route up the hills. By the time the sun was above the horizon, they had left Jebel Nagara far below them. When Nefer looked ahead, he started with surprise. There ahead of them was the faint outline of the mountain, blue against the blue of the horizon, still so far off that it seemed insubstantial and ethereal, a thing of mist and air rather than of earth and rock. The sensation that he had seen it before overcame Nefer, and for a while he was at a loss to explain it to himself. Then it came rushing back, and he said, "That mountain!" He pointed it out. "That's where we're going, isn't it, Tata?" He spoke with such assurance that Taita looked back at him. "How do you know?"
"I dreamt it last night," Nefer replied.
Taita turned away so the boy could not see his expression. At last the eyes of his mind are opening like a desert bloom in the dawn. He's learning to peer through the dark curtain that hides the future from us. He felt a deep sense of achievement. Praise the 100 names of Horus, it has not been in vain.
"That is where we're going, I know it,"
Nefer repeated with utmost certainty. "Yes," Taita agreed at last. "We are going to Bir Masara." Before the hottest part of the day, Taita led them to where a clump of ragged acacia thorn trees grew in a deep ravine, their roots drawing up water from some deep source far below the surface. When they'd unloaded the horses and watered them, Nefer cast round the grove, and within minutes had discovered signs of others who had passed this way. Excitedly, he called Taita over and showed him the wheel marks left by a small division of chariots, 10 vehicles by his reckoning. The ashes of the cooking fire and the flattened earth where men had laid down to sleep, with the horses tethered to the acacia trunks nearby.
"Hyksos?"
he hazarded anxiously, for the dung of the horses in their lines was very fresh, not more than a few days old. It was dry on the outside, but still damp when he broke open a lump. "Ours." Taita had recognized the tracks of the chariots. After all, he had made the first designs of these spoked wheels many decades before. He stooped suddenly and picked up a tiny bronze rosette ornament that had fallen from a dashboard and was half buried in the loose earth. "One of our light cavalry divisions, probably from the Pahat regiment, part of Lord Nauja's command."
"What are they doing out here, so far from the lines?"
Nefer asked, puzzled. But Taita shrugged and turned away to cover his unease. The old man cut short their period of rest, and they went on while the sun was still high. Slowly the outline of Bir Masara hardened and seemed to fill half of the sky ahead of them. Gradually they could make out the etching and scarification of gorge, bluff and cliff. As they reached the crest of the first line of foothills, Taita checked his horse and looked back. Distant movement caught his attention, and he held up his hand to shade his eyes. He could see a tiny feather of pale dust many leagues out in the desert below. He watched it for a while and saw that it was moving eastwards towards the Red Sea. It might have been thrown up by a herd of moving oryx or by a column of fighting chariots. He did not remark on it to Nefer, who was so intent on the hunt for the royal falcon that he could not tear his eyes from the silhouette of the mountain ahead. Taita thumped his heels into the flanks of his horse and moved up beside the boy. At night, when they camped halfway up the slope of Bir Masara, Taita said quietly, "We will make no fire this night."
"But it's cold,"
Nefer protested. "And we are so exposed here that a fire could be seen for 10 leagues across the desert."
"Are there enemies out there?"
Nefer's expression changed, and he gazed down over the darkening landscape with trepidation.
"Bandits? Raiding Bedouin?"
"There are always enemies," Taita told him. "Better cold than dead." After midnight, when the icy wind woke Nefer, and his colt, Stargazer, stamped and whinnied, he rolled out of his sheepskin blanket and went to calm him. He found Taita already awake, sitting a little apart. "Look," he ordered, and pointed down to the lowland. There was a distant glimmer and flicker of fire. "A campfire," Taita said.
"They might be one of our own divisions. Those who made the tracks we saw yesterday."
"They might indeed," agreed Taita. "But then again, there might be someone else." After a long, thoughtful pause, Nefer said,
"I've slept enough. It's too cold anyway. We should mount again and move on. We don't want the dawn to catch us here on the bare shoulder of the mountain."
They loaded the horses, and in the moonlight found a rough path made by wild goats that led them round the eastern shoulder of Bir Masara, so that when the light began to strengthen, they were already out of sight of any watchers in the distant encampment. The chariot of Amon-Ra, the sun god, burst furiously out of the east, and the mountain was suffused with golden light. The gorges were dark with shadow, made more sombre by the contrast, and far below, the wilderness was vast and grand. Nefer threw back his head and shouted with joy,
"Look! Look!"
and pointed up past the rock peak. Taita followed his gaze and saw the two dark specks turning in a wide circle against the heavens. The sunlight caught one so that it glowed for a second like a shooting star. "Royal falcons," Taita smiled. "A mating pair." They unloaded the horses and found a vantage point from which they were able to watch the circling birds. Even at this distance, they were regal and beautiful beyond Nefer's ability to express it. And suddenly one of the birds, the smaller male, the tiercel, broke the pattern of flight and angled up against the wind, his leisurely wing beats taking on a sudden ferocity.
"He's discovered!"
Nefer shouted with the excitement and joy of a true falconer.
"Watch him now!"
When it began, the stoop was so swift that to have taken the eye off it even for a moment would have meant missing the kill. The tiercel dropped down the sky like a thrown javelin. A single pigeon was coasting unsuspectingly near the base of the cliff. Nefer recognized the moment when the plump bird became suddenly aware of the danger and tried to avoid the falcon. It turned so violently towards the safety of the rock face that it rolled over on its back in full and frantic flight. For an instant its belly was exposed. The tiercel tore into it with both sets of talons, and the big bird seemed to dissolve in a burst of puce and purple smoke. The feathers drifted away in a long cloud on the morning wind, and the falcon bound on, locking its talons deep into the prey's belly, and plunged with it into the gorge. The killer and its victim hit the rocky scree slope only a short distance from where Nefer stood. The heavy thud of their fall echoed off the cliff and resounded down the gorge. By this time Nefer was dancing with excitement, and even Taita, who had always been a lover of the hunting hawks, gave voice to his pleasure.
"Back here,"
he said, as the falcon completed the ritual of the kill with the mantling. It spread its magnificently patterned wings over the dead pigeon, covering it and proclaiming the kill as its own. The female falcon came down to join him in a series of graceful spirals and landed on the rock beside her mate. He folded away his wings to let her share the kill, and between them they dismembered and devoured the carcass of the pigeon, ripping into it with their razor-sharp beaks, and pausing between each stroke to lift their heads and glare at Nefer with those ferocious yellow eyes, while they gulped down the bloody fragments of flesh and bone and feathers. They were fully aware of the presence of the men and horses, but tolerated them as long as they kept their distance. Then, when all that was left of the pigeon were a blood spot on the rock and a few drifting feathers, and the usually sleek bellies of the falcons were crammed with food, the pair launched into flight again. Wings flogging now to carry them, they rose up the sheer cliff face.
"Follow them!"
Taita hitched up his kilt and scampered over the treacherous footing of the scree slope.
"Don't lose them!"
Nefer was faster and more agile, and he kept the rising birds in sight as he raced along the shoulder of the mountain beneath them. Below, the peak of the mountain was split into twin needles, mighty pinnacles of dark stone, terrifying even from below. They watched the falcons rise up this mighty natural monument, until Nefer realized where they were headed. Where the rock overhung, halfway up the eastern tower, there was a V-shaped cleft in the stone face. Stuffed into it was a platform of dried branches and twigs.
"The nest!" Nefer shrieked. "There's the nest!"
They stood together, heads thrown back, watching the falcons alight one after the other on the edge of the nest, and begin to heave and strain to regurgitate the pigeon flesh from their crops. Another faint sound came to Nefer on the wind that soughed along the cliff face, a chorus of importunate cries from the young birds demanding to be fed. From this angle, he and Taita could not glimpse the falcon chicks, and Nefer was hopping with frustration.
"If we climb the western peak there," he pointed, "we should be able to look down into the nest."
"Help me with the horses first," Taita ordered, and they hobbled them and left them to graze on sparse clumps of mountain grass, nurtured by the dews carried by the breeze from the distant Red Sea. The climb up the western peak took the rest of the morning, but even though Taita had unerringly picked on the easiest route around the far side of the peak, in places the drop beneath them made Nefer draw in his breath sharply and look away. They came out at last onto a narrow ledge just below the summit. They crouched there for a while to compose themselves and to stare out at the grandeur of land and distant sea. It seemed that the whole of creation was spread beneath them, and the wind moaned round them, tugging at the folds of Nefer's kilt and ruffling his curls.
"Where's the nest?"
he asked. Even in this lofty and precarious place high above the world, his mind was fixed on one thing only. "Come." Taita rose and shuffled sideways along the ledge, with the toes of his sandals overhanging the drop. They made their way round the angle, and slowly the eastern peak came into view. They looked across to the vertical rock face only 100 cubits away, but separated from them by such an abyss that Nefer swayed with vertigo. On this side of the gulf they were slightly higher than the nest, and could look down upon it. The female falcon was perched on the edge, obscuring its contents. She turned her head and stared implacably at them as they rounded the shoulder of the peak. She raised the feathers along her back as an angry lion lifts its mane in threat. Then she let out a wild cry and launched herself out over the droop to hang almost motionless on the wind, watching them intently. She was so close that every feather in her wings was clearly revealed. Her movement had exposed the interior of the cleft that contained the nest. A pair of young birds was crouched in the cup of twigs and branches lined with feathers and the wool of wild goats. They were fully fledged already, and almost as large as their mother. As Nefer stared across at them in awe, one raised itself and spread its wings wide, then beat them fiercely.
"He is beautiful,"
Nefer groaned with longing.
"The most beautiful thing I've ever seen."
"He practices for the moment of flight," Taita warned him softly. "See how strong he has grown. Within days he will be gone."
"I will climb for him this very day,"
Nefer vowed, and made as if to go back along the ledge, but Taita stopped him with a hand on his shoulder.
"It is not something to enter into lightly. We must spend a little precious time in planning it carefully. Come, sit beside me."
As Nefer leant against his shoulder, Taita pointed out the features of the rock opposite them.
"Below the nest, the rock is smooth as glass. For 50 cubits sheer, there's no handhold, no ledge on which to place a foot."
Nefer tore his eyes from the young bird and peered down. His stomach churned, but he forced himself to ignore it. It was, as Taita had said, not even one of the rock hyraxes, those furry, sure-footed, rabbit-like creatures that made these lofty places their home. could have found a footing on that pitch of vertical rock.
How can I get to the nest, Tata? I want those chicks, I want them so.
Look above the nest, Taita pointed across. See how the cleft continues upwards, to the very top of the cliff. Nefer nodded. He could not speak as he stared at the perilous road Taita was showing him. We will find a way to reach the summit above the nest. We'll take up the harness ropes with us. From the top, I will lower you down the crack. If you wedge your bare feet and bunched fists sideways into the opening, they will hold you, and I will steady you with a rope. Still Nefer could not speak. He felt nauseated by what Taita had suggested. Surely no living person could make that climb and survive. Taita understood what he was feeling and did not insist on a reply.
I think...
Hesitantly, Nefer started to refuse, then fell silent and stared at the young pair of birds in the nest. He knew that this was his destiny. One of them was his godbird, and this was the only way to achieve the crown of his fathers. To turn away now was to deny everything for which the gods had chosen him. He must go. Taita sensed the moment when the boy beside him accepted the task and thus became a man. He rejoiced deep in his heart, for this also was his destiny.
I will make the attempt,
Nefer said simply, and rose to his feet.
Let us go down and prepare ourselves.